Track 2. Unit 2. Listening. Part 2. Sentence completion.
Hi, and welcome to today's travel podcast about one of the strangest new trends, sleep tourism. Of course, the fundamental purpose of a hotel is as a place to sleep, yet most hotel facilities encourage us to do anything but that, from late-night eateries to dawn-till-dusk entertainment. It's not uncommon to return from a holiday even more exhausted than before. So the idea of sleep tourism is that hotels prioritise a decent night's sleep above all else, with innovative techniques to help you to nod off quickly and snooze soundly till morning. Sleep is also making quite a comeback these days, with a much wider realisation that our physical and mental health is intimately connected with the quality of our sleep, after decades of being scorned by high achievers as a needless luxury when they should be working or networking. In a nutshell, if you're not getting enough sleep, you're making yourself ill. You might get away with it for a while, but you'll pay the price in the end. Not to put too fine a point on it, the longer you sleep, the longer you'll live, all other things being equal. So how is a sleep-centred hotel different from a normal one? For a start, the rooms have high-tech soundproofing to keep the noises from the street and from the hotel's communal areas out of your ears. That'll be a welcome change for anyone who's tried to kip in a regular hotel. We're talking about soundproofed walls, top-notch double glazing and solid tight ceiling doors. The next issue is light. You don't want to be kept awake by flashing neon signs outside your window, or indeed to be awakened at the crack of dawn by glorious sunshine. So the rooms need heavy blackout curtains to cover the windows without even a crack of daylight peeping through. Of course, having sealed the room to keep out noise and light, you've created a new problem. A lack of fresh air. Most decent hotels already have air conditioning systems, but they're usually a poor substitute for the real thing. Too stuffy, too intense, too noisy. Sleep hotels will almost certainly have to overhaul theirs if they want their customers to sleep like logs. Next, of course, is the bed. I don't know about you, but I've had to put up with some dreadful hotel beds over the years, even in supposedly luxurious hotels. That's because we all have different perspectives on the perfect mattress. Some prefer a soft one to sink into. Others are most at home on something far more rigid. So, as I see it, those staying in sleep hotels ought to be given a choice of at least three, tailored to their own preferences. As for bedding, the possibilities are endless, and so should be the range of choices. Do you prefer a light and fluffy duvet? Do you need to be constrained by a weighted blanket? And so on and so on. Finally, the hotel must offer a wide range of additional services to help its guests to drift off, from foot massages to herbal tea, and from whale music to scented pillow mist. All these things can help, but there's still no guarantee of a good night's rest. Indeed, if, in spite of all these sleep inducements, you're still unable to nod off, it could well be a sign of an underlying medical condition, be it severe stress, insomnia, sleep apnea, or restless leg syndrome. For this reason, it's vital for sleep hotels to provide medical consultations beyond simply pampering their guests. The real benefit of sleep tourism might not be that you get a decent night's sleep or two, but rather that you learn techniques that'll help you sleep better on a permanent basis. In other words, don't dismiss sleep tourism as the latest fad designed to extract as much cash as possible out of affluent tourists, although there's certainly some truth in that. Instead, think of it as a life-changing experience for those who are struggling with a nightmare of poor quality sleep.